Iris Breen, lovely to be here and talking to you. Your story, I know, is very sad and terrible, but let's get a background to who you are. What was your maiden name?
Iris Bowles, and I was brought up was brought up outside Maguire's Bridge, between Ripper and Temple. From a farming background, didn't go to university, but joined the Northern Ireland Civil Service in 1971, and worked as a civilian for police.
And growing up in Maguire's Bridge, you were born in 1951. So, as a young person, what was it like there?
It was lovely. There was no trouble. The troubles hadn't started, obviously, until 69, by which time I was working in Belfast, where it was a completely different story. Every night there was the bombs and bullets and fire engines and ambulances flying, but in the country where I lived, you were friends with everybody, Catholic, Protestant, didn't matter. Just a good.
Yes, and your own, you were saying your father was a farmer, and you grew up in that background.
Yes.
And born into the Church of Ireland.
Methodist.
And so your life was, until you reached the north, was fairly stable. Talk to me about the work you were doing in Belfast again. What exactly was that?
It was just secretarial work for police authority for Northern Ireland. The police were out on the ground and we were in the office doing the backroom stuff, kind of.
So it was...
just basically secretarial.
And so how long did you remain in that position then?
I was in Belfast for 2 years and then... came back to Lisinski here to work for traffic branch, again police.
And so were you in a uniform every day?
No, civilian again.
Yeah.
So again, secretarial.
Okay.
Stayed there, met my husband there, or husband-to-be there.
Derek.
Yes. Yeah. He was part-time police. Part-time police reserve at that time.
What business, or was he business in business or farming?
No, he was an insurance agent in Lisinski and part-time police in the evenings. So I met him through work, I suppose. And then he wanted to join the police full-time, which he did in 79. We got married in 78. And he went into police training in October 79.
Where was he? Was he here in Lisinski, or...?
He was based in Oma, first of all, for a few years. So I transferred to Oma police station, and we got a house there. And after about 2 to 3 years, very happy years in Oma, the... loyalist, can't even remember, paramilitaries, I suppose, made threats against Derek, quite severe threats.
Why was that?
I don't honestly know, just because he was policeman, I suppose, and maybe he had arrested somebody or whatever. So anyway, the threats got more and more severe, and we were moved overnight, bag and baggage, from Oma to Lisinski. He was posted to Lisinski. I was moved to traffic branch in Enniskillen. So, in Lisinski for 84, 85, Sarah, our daughter, was born in May 1985. And towards the end of that year, Derek completely changed. His personality changed. He was withdrawn. He was not interested really in anything. Christmas came, he didn't want to do Christmas shopping, he didn't want to do anything.
Why did his personality change so quickly?
Well, I then learned, he said to me after Christmas that he wanted me to give up working. He wanted me to be at home with Sarah and spend more time with him and her. And I said, why? And then he says, well, I can't tell you, but I am under severe threat from Provisional IRA, mainly due to Owen Curran being on the run and some arrest he was involved in. And he says, for the time being, I would like to spend more time with you and Sarah. So that was January, we had that conversation. And then four or five weeks later, on the 11th of February, he had a habit of calling at the Talk of the Town public house in McGuire's Bridge. Two reasons. One was to collect free-range eggs for Sarah because she had an intolerance to some things. And secondly, probably to relax before he came home occasionally with a few colleagues. But anyway, on the 11th of February 1986, that's where he was. And gunmen entered and he just shouted to everybody, get down, they know who they want. But unfortunately, as well as his life, they took John McCabe's, the barman. And then they set fire to the pub. But police on duty removed the bodies and quickly pulled them up towards McGuire's Bridge Main Street. So, after that, then that was a Tuesday, so funeral was Friday. On the Thursday, my sister-in-law Margaret and her husband Ian and I went over to Ballyconnell and met John McCabe's family. And we were very well received because I felt it was because of me and Derek that they had lost their son.
Oh, yes.
Because probably if he hadn't been there, it wouldn't have happened. But I don't think they saw it like that. And then funeral was on a snowy Friday in February in the Methodist Church in Lisbelow. Massive.
Big crowd.
And then, I suppose, for the next 6 months, my house was constant visitors, constant phone calls. Sarah was a bad baby. She knows I would say this. She never slept. And less so after that, because two mornings following the funeral, she crawled around the house and opened every door and peered around. Did that for a few mornings. And so, obviously, she was missing.
Her dad.
Yes, she knew something was wrong. She became anxious, never slept, just cry for maybe 6 weeks, 2 months. And really, she never started to get back into routine until she went to play school at 3. I was up most nights, in fact, up every night quite a bit. So I had to go part-time at work because I couldn't...
Of course.
Couldn't run the house, cope with her and work full-time and cope with visitors. And money was tight at that time because with a joint account and a merger, everything was frozen. So my father bailed me out, as did police authority, until such time as solicitors got everything sorted. So that first year was difficult, to say the least. I wasn't able to get part-time work for 3 years.
Yeah.
And then I did, which made things a lot easier. So it was thanks to family and friends and work that carried me through those first 3 years. Sarah went to play school. It became much easier.
Yeah.
She was in a routine, she was sleeping. And now she's my best friend. She's 32. Got married last year. But yes, there has been many a tough time.
But just to go back, the time that from the time that your husband first was in OMA, and the work he was doing there, and the threats he was getting from the UVF.
Yes, UVF in OMA. Yes, it was UVF.
And so then, because of that, the two of you left.
Because of that, we left, and then the next threats were from Pyra.
And so you feel that the reason why his life was threatened up there is because he possibly arrested somebody that...
He was a CID detective, and he was very diligent and very... He was a hard worker. Just because he was probably... He was a good detective, and he did get awards and things. And if he got a lead on somebody, he followed it to the end. So probably because of that,
yes,
he was disliked to some degree.
And then when he came down here, and he was stationed in Lisiniski.
Lisiniski.
And this was in the, what years?
80. Came to Lisiniski summer of 84.
And it was fairly rough here as well.
It was very rough here at that time, really rough.
You say his life was again threatened, but this time by the IRA, is
that? Yes, that's because he had followed up on Owen Caron, who was the MP down here.
What exactly do you know? Have you got the background to that?
No, I don't have, unfortunately. All I know was he was very aware of Owen Caron and his friends, if I can say it that way, looking for him. Wanting him, but I don't know the background.
Yeah.
He just had been warned to be careful that he was under threat, and then it became more severe towards Christmas of 85, and then early 86 then he was murdered.
And the reason why, you know, kind of he was... Anybody who has a death threat on his life, and you know, it's going to put huge pressure on his family.
Yes.
And you felt that pressure.
I felt that pressure from October 85 until Christmas 85, when I knew there was something, because he had a very bubbly personality, you know, was bright, but... And he'd also... I also loved taking Sarah on a Sunday morning over to Lisiniski and bringing her into work, but he had stopped that and said no, he couldn't do it anymore. But now I know why, and thank goodness he did stop it.
Yeah.
Because they could have attacked him with her in the car or something. So obviously he knew he was under severe threat. And
yeah. Yeah, and what he's... expertise in the force, he would have had knowledge or security would have alerted him to
that's
that.
Right.
So he was he with a colleague when he went into the bar?
Yes, he was with two CID colleagues, yes. One had left before anything had happened, and the other one, obviously they weren't interested in Tom, I don't. He wasn't touched.
They just wanted Eric, is it?
Yes. And as I say, he said, everyone get down. They know who they want.
And why did they shoot the barman then, too?
He must have, just in the way, maybe. I would say they were close together, maybe, I think.
Yeah.
They would have had no reason to touch John, but... obviously just in the way.
Yeah. So the funerals, you spoke about that, but did Eric, and you, did you go to John McCabe's funeral?
No, we didn't go to the funeral. We went to the house and spoke to his parents and sisters. I think somebody from the place, yes, place side, were represented at the McCabe funeral.
And did you find, did the McCabes come over to Eric's funeral? Or?
I think some of them, I think they were represented somewhere along the way. You really didn't know who was there, to be honest. You were just...
I know, sure, you were...
In a state of shock.
And your life afterwards then, you had to get on with things and rear your daughter.
That's right.
And was this a reoccurring thing, or you know, did you feel the pressure of this constantly?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it reoccurred quite often, you know, it was... And then as Sarah got older, you know, she had various bad times, and Sarah teaches in Lisinski, and for some unknown reason, especially around the anniversary date or Father's Day or whatever, she seems to always run into him, and even yet that still upsets her and annoys her, so you still have to provide a counselling service as such still. But yes, she was very easy to rear, and she was very good. But every birthday and Christmas, there was the tears, my daddy.
And how does it feel knowing the people who were...
I think it's
hard. And who are now out and about?
No, it's harder. It really is. I mean, it really... And walking the streets with his own family and wife, and... I don't know if his life's normal, but it looks as normal as...
Yeah.
Well, he's deprived, I suppose, us of true family life, and deprived Sarah of her father. She has no memories at all. And her favourite thing to do was sit down and tell her stories about him, her dad, and did he love her, did he not love her, and all.
Right. Imagine that, yes. And so
that.
They were very close.
Yes.
You know.
And I suppose very poignantly, last year she got married, and the run up to that was difficult. On the day it was fine because we'd got all the tears out. But she carried his photograph in her bouquet and different wee bits and pieces, and I know she did miss him on that day. So,
what do you think when you you see? I mean, you're obviously a victim of the violence, and I can see it in you that you're still carrying that pain.
Yeah, I don't think it ever leaves you, Morris. Time heals, yes. Time doesn't heal. You learn to cope and live with it. I think time is good as well. It does, but you do learn to cope with it.
And in the community, do you talk to people about it, or is it something that
I suppose that's why the police welfare is a good... Safe's good as well. You know, you have people in there that you can talk to. We've a widows association, a police widows association, where everyone's in the same position. So yes, through the years, I've talked to lots of widows.
And have you met John McCabe's sister?
Funny, I haven't in the last 30 years, not since the day we went over following the murder, but she sent me a message just before it came out today. I believe you're meeting Morris this afternoon. Best wishes for your meeting. You will he is genuine, he is very good, whatever. You will enjoy, not enjoy it, you will get something out of it.
Yeah.
And
Was it good to hear from her after that length of time?
It was, yeah. No, I sent her a wee message back and said it was lovely to hear from her, and you know, if I would let her know tonight how it went. So I will offer to meet her. If that's what she wants.
There are other police men in the force as well who were murdered, and others who escaped with their lives. And Jeff Smith is one who's had a bomb
placed.
And but he survived that, but and is now in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. But when you meet somebody like that, I mean, and you know that man, what goes through your mind then?
Yes, I know Jeff and Debbie very well, and I knew Jeff before the bomb, and I knew Bob, his colleague, who was injured, very well. I worked with both of them. Two lovely fellas. Actually, on the day of the bomb, I had Sarah dressed and ready to go down to the traffic office where they worked to see everybody for the first time. I got a phone call to say what had happened. I didn't know he was involved, but when I found out, it was hard. Yes, when I look at Jeff, I think, well, yes, are you luckier than me? I don't. Yes, he, of course he is. But when I look at his injuries and wheelchair bound, and I won't say I feel sorry for Jeff, because he wouldn't want me to say that, but do you think it's so, so difficult? You know, it must be.
Of course it is, yeah.
Yes, he survived, but he has such long-term life-changing injuries. It's so, so difficult. And I'm glad, so glad he did survive.
And it was life-changing for you too.
Yes.
And so when you have to live in, and you did, in the direct aftermath, you lived here in Lisniski.
Lisbelaw.
Or in Lisbelaw.
Lisbelaw.
And so, were you constantly on alert? Were you fearful?
Yes, you were fearful, because working for the police, you had to check underneath your car every day, even as a civilian.
Did you continue to work for the police after that?
I did. I worked for another. I just retired in 2 years ago, 2015, after 45 years.
My goodness.
Total police.
Yeah.
I spent from 71 to 76 as a part-time reserve member, which was in uniform, patrolling Lisniski streets at night.
For what years?
71 to 76.
Imagine, yeah. So,
as well as a civilian.
Did you encounter any problem yourself during that time?
Yes, one night we were two-car patrol heading out towards, well, more in north's direction, Newton Butler. And we
That's on the Monaghan, Fermanagh border.
Yes, we got as far as Dona and came upon a large crater hole in the road. Just an explosion had gone off a short while earlier. And as we got out of the car, we realised there was an Army Land Rover in the crater, the hole. And the trip wires were there, and a lot of my friends and colleagues, Norman Prue, Billy Brown, police murdered, Bob Gilliland, you know, close friends. And I suppose working for the police, you knew an awful lot of those that were murdered, but those three were.
And they were in the Jeep that night, were they?
Not that night, no. It was Army that night.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And you came across the bodies?
We came across that, so yeah.
And that must have been...
That leaves a big effect. Yes, it does. So that was before I had met Derek or anything like that.
Yeah.
So
you lived your life very much in the middle of all of this.
Very much in the middle of it.
Yeah.
because of who I worked for and because of what I'd done, I suppose. But
and so your work as in admin or administration, I mean, so you were kind of aware of...
Yes, you're always aware of...
Of incidences and you know, what things were going on and happening.
As they happened, yeah.
And so how informative, do you mind me asking, you know, kind of the information coming into you, were you well informed with security? Were you,
Well, in the early days, possibly not. It wasn't that good, but as with experience and with so many incidents happening, it began, it filtered through much.
So the intelligence was there.
Yes, intelligence was there, and our security was very important to them. Yeah. And you were always informed.
And so you were aware, really, of the names of the people who were the perpetrators, but some of them couldn't be brought to justice.
That's right.
So how frustrating was that?
Very. Yes, it's very frustrating with my husband, but yet never ever will that come to court. Or, and there's many more. There's a lot of more local input, I suppose, as well. And a few names come to mind, but it's never ever going to happen.
But like you said, your daughter bumped into this man a few times. But how, when you walked down the street, you know, the people are still there, you know.
That's right. It's harder for her, I must admit, because I'm not in Lisinski that much, but she works here, she teaches here, and she does seem to see him a lot. So for her, I feel bad.
But I suppose as you go through years and years of police work, you become very hard yourself.
You do, Morris. You become very hardened to it all, even though you've come through it yourself. It's a strange one.
Yeah, it is. But it's a life that you chose.
It's a life I chose. And looking back, it wouldn't have changed. Would have changed.
Obviously, the incidents.
The incidents, but wouldn't have changed where I worked. And the police have been very good to me.
Yeah.
You know, down the years. So, you often sit and wonder, if this hadn't happened, where we'd be, what we'd be doing, how life would have been different.
Yeah.
You know, and who knows? You know, you don't.
It's pretty hard to
to
go back over that and to try and think about that. But your story is amazing. I mean, when you put together two people from both sides of the border, happened to be in the same place. And both lost their lives.
It's. I suppose.
How did the news come back to you? Do you mind?
On the night.
On the night, Do you remember?
I do. Derek was due home around 8 o'clock. I had Sarah bathed, fed, ready for bed, trying to keep her awake so that he could put her to bed, maybe. Yeah, about 6:40. Was it 20? Yeah. About 6:40. I was aware of cars up and down the road past my house. But didn't pass an awful lot of remarks. And then about 6:55, the doorbell went, and I went to the door, and there was three police whom I recognised, two policewomen. I knew by their faces. So they asked me to come in, and I said yes. So they came in, and they immediately took Sarah off me. Made me sit down, and they said there'd been an incident in McGuire's Bridge, and then they broke the news, and with that my house just filled with people. The world and the crows were outside. That was all the cars I heard, and unknown to me there was policemen at the bottom, policemen at the top, keeping everyone away from my house until police arrived. So
My goodness. Yeah.
So that was the night my life changed.
Yeah. And finally, before I finish, the last question. But so, the 44 years you spent, is it 45? Sorry, we can't be about the fifth.
No.
So 45 years in the police department, yes. If you like. It was a learning curve for you all along the way.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The police force, they put their lives on the line. They have been much more so when the troubles were going on.
Oh, yeah.
And you said you lost a lot of friends when you were there.
Yeah, I did, yes. Lost a lot of people who I was quite close to. And then since, I suppose, got really friendly with their wives and families. Mm. So kind of helped each other that way. But yeah, certainly every time they went on duty, they wouldn't have known if they were going to come back in or not.
And Iris, looking at the perpetrators, how did you see them? Who were these people? How did you see them?
I suppose afterwards I became really, really bitter, and I wasn't a bitter person, and I turned completely against the Roman Catholic side because I blamed everybody on that side for this. I was cross with Derek for being in the pump. I was cross with everybody. Didn't really think an awful lot about who did it for a long time.
Were you angry with the Irish people, say, coming from the Republic?
Yes, I was. I was. I really was. Because I felt, yeah, they did this and then they escaped across the border. Which they probably did, but that wasn't the fault of the Southern people, looking back on it. But yes, you were cross with...
Yeah.
Everybody and anything. Then, of course, you began to realise, well, it's the IRA that did this. And just because you're Roman Catholic doesn't mean, you know, I still don't like Sinn Féin, I will be honest. But my daughter married a Roman Catholic. I've nothing against Roman Catholics whatsoever. I'm very tolerant.
Yeah.
There's no bitterness in me now.
Yeah.
Yes, IRA and Sinn Féin, I would be still cross about with.
I know, and it's not easy to come and talk about this either, you know. But when I listen to you talking about what happened to you in your life, do you feel you've lost part of your life? You know, it's been taken from you.
Yes, I do feel. You know, a big part of my life has been taken, you know. For a long time you existed, you didn't live, you were going through the motions of living. I suppose companionship, holidays, all of that was gone.
Yeah.
You were bringing up a child single-handedly. I know a lot of people do, single parents, but I think a child who's lost its father in the troubles has other issues to deal with, and they're dealing with that. So,
yeah.
No, I wouldn't say it's easy, but yet I'm very happy now where I am, and you know, so thankful for what I have, I suppose.
Iris Breen, thank you so much for talking to me. I appreciate.
You're welcome.
Your story very much. Thank you.
It's probably a bit disjointed, but...
I'll put it together, don't worry.
I'm depending on you first.